Well, thank you, everyone, for taking the time to come here today to participate in our discussion concerning circumstances under which interruption of cell phone service may be appropriate. Thank you also for moving the debate from the BART platform to the boardroom, and thus being respectful of BART's 350,000 daily customers that are just trying to build up their daily lives. What is great about this country is that this dialogue can occur, and hopefully from it will emerge a policy which best serves to protect the safety and rights of our passengers, and also create a policy which may serve as a model for other governmental agencies when the issue undoubtedly will arise elsewhere in the nation when freedom of speech and public safety is denied. So today we'll begin this dialogue and hear a brief presentation from our staff and hear from the public and get some ideas and hopefully begin to formulate a policy where we will give direction to BART staff and in one or two meeting cycles, in 2 or 4 weeks, we'll come back and take a vote on the policy that we did today. So with that, we have a brief 10-minute presentation from BART staff, and then we will begin to the public.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. First of all, we'll have a brief sort of recap of the history leading up to the cell phone interruption from Chief BART Police Chief Ken Rainey. We will also have a brief presentation by our Assistant General Manager for Operations, Paul Overseer, concerning the safety aspects, particularly of very crowded stations and interruption service, and what that does to passenger safety. And finally, we'll go from our general counsel, Matt Burrows, concerning some of the legal issues that have been raised concerning this incident. So I'll turn it over to Chief Rainey.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And thank you for having this hearing today. This is very timely, very necessary. I would like to recap and take us through what brought us here today. As you're aware, on July 3rd, we had an officer involved shooting, and Charles Hill was shot and killed by our officers after he attacked them with a knife. This is a very unfortunate and tragic incident. Our condolences again goes out to his family and friends. This matter is still under investigation by the San Francisco Police Department, BART Internal Affairs, from our police department, the San Francisco District Attorney's Office, and the BART Independent Police Auditor. As a result of that incident, on July 7th, we had a spontaneous demonstration at our Civic Center station at approximately 6:30 p.m. Approximately 50 protesters blocked access to our fare gates, holding large banners. They did acts of vandalism, confronted and actually battered two of our commuters, which we arrested those individuals for. On July 11th, we were notified of a planned protest at the Civic Center station again that was to start at 5 p.m. The group No Justice, No BART was the ones who were sponsoring this protest. My staff informed me that we had had prior dealings with them over Johannes Meserle situation that happened in January in 2009. They were aware of our rules, so we prepared for a peaceful protest, and police maintained a very low profile. Approximately 75 protesters showed up on our platforms and immediately engaged in illegal behavior, blocking access and creating unsafe conditions on the platform. They were illegally holding train doors open, climbing on top of the train cars, and got into confrontations with the BART employees. This was well documented and publicized in the media. Eventually, the police responded, unlawful assembly was declared, and it led to the closure of our 16th Street station and our Powell Street station, and created a very public safety hazardous condition. During the second week of August, we received information from a reliable source that another protest was being planned by this group, No Justice, No Bark. Again, this was to take place at our Civic Center station. An emphasis was being placed on the platform with a start time of 5 o'clock. Information that came to us and was provided to us was copies of the blog webpage that said the basic strategy was going to be the same as the last demonstration, which occurred on July 11th. However, their stated intent was to avoid allowing bar police and bar staff to know their true intentions so we could not prepare. The blog was periodically updated. Instructions were given to anybody who was to participate to wear special clothing, bring masks, gloves, signs, banners, noisemakers, and any other gear that they felt that they would needed in order to perform their protest. Participants were assigned risk levels of red, yellow, and green. Anybody that was assigned a risk level red was a very high likelihood that they would be arrested, that they were going to engage in risky behavior, i.e. locking oneself to an object, refusing to move. Anyone assigned a yellow risk level was to block entrances and refuse to remove until a final disposal order was given by the police. Their goal was to hit two of our stations simultaneously. Participants were told to keep their gear and conspicuous clothing hidden. Red teams were directed to go directly to Embarcadero Station and wait for a signal. The yellow and green teams were to go to Civic Center Station and meet at 4 p.m. It became very apparent to us that they're probably going to use flash mob tactics via their cell phones to implement and execute this two-station plan strategy. In addition, their plan was to provide information on law enforcement's presence, numbers, and movement. And via their cell phones or texting, they instructed their members that it was important for them to provide information to the red teams about our response. Based on everything that we had seen and experienced up until this point, what we felt this group was doing was encouraging and promoting and inciting illegal behavior on our platforms in order to disrupt our service. Not to mention, if they were successful in the execution of this plan, their behavior would significantly place BART commuters and public safety at risk. And Paul Lucia will describe the public safety risk.
Thank you, Chief. I'd like to discuss the reasons why the downtown San Francisco train service interruptions of July the 11th and the even more serious interruption that we anticipated for August the 11th represented a significant public safety risk. The four downtown San Francisco stations are the busiest stations in the BART system, with Embarcadero and Montgomery having over 36,000 and 34,000 exits per weekday, respectively. Civic Center Station is the fourth busiest station in the system with over 18,000 exits per weekday. But to give you an idea of how concentrated our ridership is in downtown San Francisco, Civic Center with the fourth highest ridership, actually its ridership is 50% higher than the next most busy station, which is 12th Street City Center in Oakland. So there's that big of a difference between the four downtown San Francisco stations and the next most busy station. I'd like to focus for a minute on the busiest 15 minutes of the day for us in downtown San Francisco, which is between 5 o'clock and 5:15. Which incidentally is 5 o'clock is the time that a couple of these demonstrations were advertised to start. To pick one station, Embarcadero, people are entering Embarcadero at a rate of 177 people per minute during that peak period. Embarcadero's narrower than normal platform width and its high entry rate mean that the platform will be at capacity in about 8 minutes if there are no trains operating to take people off the platform. That's why any kind of significant delay in downtown San Francisco during the rush hour will usually force us to close one or more stations in order to prevent overcrowding. Obviously, trains are also very crowded during the rush hour. The average car on the average train leaving Embarcadero for the East Bay in that same 15-minute window has 94 people on it. Again, that's the average car leaving Embarcadero for the East Bay in the peak of the peak, has almost 100 riders per car. The bottom line for BART is that downtown San Francisco at 5 p.m. is the maximum stress point at the maximum stress time. The imperative to keep trains moving through the area during the afternoon rush hour is why we have a paramedic assigned to downtown San Francisco, why we have fixed police posts assigned there, why we have supervisors assigned there, and why we have mainline technicians assigned there. It's all about public safety and keeping the trains moving. If trains don't flow freely through downtown San Francisco in the PM, things can go very wrong very fast. A small hiccup in service can quickly lead to platform overcrowding and then station closure, especially at Embarcadero. Trains that are running just a few minutes late become more and more overcrowded and get later and later due to the steady flow of customers coming onto the platform. Overcrowded trains lead to customer discomfort and distress, sometimes resulting in medical emergencies. Again, this is one reason why the district is spending over $200,000 a year to have paramedics assigned at either end of the Transbay Tube during the rush period, both AM and PM. Train overcrowding can also be a contributor to altercations between customers on the trains. Service delays that cause trains to stop between stations in underground tunnels or in the Transbay Tube also lead to increased passenger apprehension, occasionally manifesting itself in the form of a panic attack, a seizure, or some other medical emergency, just by virtue of the fact that the train is stopped between stations in a dark tunnel. It's almost an axiom in our operations control center that as a major delay is clearing up, someone on a train that was stuck in the queue behind the initial incident will develop a condition that requires medical attention. Finally, one of the very worst outcomes of trains not moving, especially through downtown San Francisco, is a passenger self-evacuation. Fortunately, at BART, passenger self-evacuations are relatively rare. However, they have happened in the past. There have been a couple of them. When they do occur, the first people who self-evacuate from a train are putting themselves at risk for the 1,000 volts of electricity running through a third rail, which would not have been dropped yet. Obviously, as soon as we hear of a self-evacuation, the first thing we do is drop the power. However, when we do that, we run the risk of trapping other trains between stations in dark tunnels because we didn't have time to move them into a station. Now, the examples that I've given you are not hypothetical. These are all things that have occurred at BART, some more frequently than others. In any case, with more than 500 people per minute, that's 500 people per minute entering the downtown San Francisco stations during the peak of the evening commute, delays caused by demonstrators holding doors, attempting to climb on top of cars, or worse, represent a real and tangible threat to the safety of our riders. With that, I'd like to turn it over to our Chief Counsel, Matt Burrows, to discuss some of the free speech issues related to the district's turning off of cell phone service on August 11th. And by the way, the picture that was up there is Embarcadero in the rush hour. And that's not a typical rush hour, but that is what this happens to be. That was a day when the Bay Bridge was closed, so we carried a lot of riders. But the crowding that you see there is not unusual for Embarcadero, particularly when there's any kind of small delay in service. It gets very crowded very quickly. Matt?
For more than 25 years, BART has had a policy of allowing the exercise of First Amendment rights.
No mic.
For more than 25 years, BART has had a policy of allowing the exercise of First Amendment rights in the three areas of the station. This policy has been carefully developed to comply with constitutional standards and reflect Park's commitment to allowing First Amendment activity at Park stations where it could be done without interfering with Park's primary mission of providing safe and reliable transportation service. Park's policy recognizes that it would not be safe to have demonstrations located on the platform area where the danger of moving trains, falling passengers, and electrocution are present. Under this policy, groups or individuals who want to conduct a demonstration at a BART station can apply for a permit using a simple procedure that has been working well for many years and may demonstrate or protest in the three areas of all stations. Now, there are two underlying First Amendment doctrines implicated by these policies. The first doctrine is called the public forum doctrine, which divides public forums into three categories. The first is traditional public forums. You can think of parks or town squares. That's an example of a traditional public forum. Designated public forums are public property opened by the agency for expressive use. And an example of that is, as I described according to BART's policy, the three areas of BART stations. The third type of forum is a non-forum, a publicly owned facility that has never been designated for expressive activity to the general public. The platform or paid areas of BART stations are not designated public forums. To the contrary, BART has designated them as non-forums, and thus the district has the right to prohibit demonstrations and other similar expressive activities in these areas, so long as the prohibition is reasonable and not based on viewpoint. Now, the prohibition of demonstrations in platform areas is reasonable because it is based on safety concerns that we just heard from the Assistant General Manager, and it is not viewpoint-oriented, as it is a general restriction that applies without regard to any viewpoint. Passengers, employees, and protesters can be seriously injured by falling onto the trackway, getting pushed onto the trackway, getting stuck in doorways. There are many examples in Mr. Overseer Davy to justify this. Now, the second First Amendment doctrine that comes into play here is from a United States Supreme Court case known as Brandenburg versus Ohio. Now, the Brandenburg decision involved hate speech by the Ku Klux Klan. But what it did was it established the current First Amendment standard applicable to when government may regulate speech on the ground of a threat of violence and imminent unlawful conduct. Under Brandenburg, the government, BART, may permissibly restrict speech directed to inciting and producing imminent lawless action that is likely to produce such action. BART pleads that credible evidence that protesters were planning to engage in unlawful and dangerous actions on the BART platform and threaten the safety of BART passengers and employees. The evidence further disclosed that the organizers intended to implement their plans for unlawful and dangerous activities and to monitor and combat the BART police response via cell phone. And in these circumstances, the district's decision to effect a temporary interruption of cell phone service is consistent with the First Amendment.
Okay, thank you very much for the presentation to the I'd like to go directly to the office at this point. We have a 3-year approval. Back then we have primarily 14 speakers that have signed up. The first is Gary H.
I'm a BART user, I'm a cell phone user, and I'm a supporter of the First Amendment rights. But I'm here to say that, in my opinion, the claim that there is any First Amendment issue here at all is specious, and it trivializes our First Amendment freedoms. I'm sure you've been made aware of the, I think it was another Supreme Court decision on regulating frauds, I don't have the name of it. But it says that while clearly government may not regulate content, it certainly can regulate noise, traffic, and public safety. And you have no obligation at all to provide any wireless service, and you certainly haven't regulated content as long as you're not selectively regulating the service. It's a public safety issue, and as it's been said, train platforms are inherently hazardous, the more so when they're crowded, and all the more so when there's an unruly crowd. And therefore, I would just urge the board to not be distracted by these phony claims of infringement of supposed First Amendment rights, and to concentrate on the public safety. And the proper question is merely whether the action to cut off the service temporarily contributed to the public safety or not. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. The next speaker is Michael Wizard.
Good morning. My name is Michael Risher. I'm a staff attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union of Northern California, and I'm here speaking on behalf of the ACLU. I want to make it clear, our focus is BART's policy going forward. This board has a duty under the Public Utilities Code to set BART policy, and I'm glad that it's taken that duty seriously, looking at what happens in the future, regardless of what happened 2 weeks ago. And specifically, we're talking about the use of the cell phone network here. That's a different situation than we're talking about the use of the platforms. There are important issues involved in both of them. We've made our legal views pretty clear in the two letters that we've sent you. I see you have copies of them in the back. I appreciate that. I take it they're part of the record. I won't go back into that. It's our position that the cell phone network is a designated public forum, as you mentioned, under the U.S. Constitution. And what that means is BART cannot interfere with it in an unreasonable way, but it also can't cut it off for particular because it's being used for particular purposes, except in very, very limited circumstances. Certainly, a designated public forum becomes a public forum like a park. We all know that you have to allow demonstrations in parks, and you can't shut the gates of the park simply because an unpopular group shows up here. Whether or not the government has a duty to build parks in the first place, I think that's what's going on with the cell phone network here. Of course, as we discussed in our letter, the California Constitution provides even more protection. But putting aside the legal issues here, I think we also need to ask ourselves, do we want to have a society where the government is in a position to shut down a communications network used by thousands upon thousands of people simply because a few of those people are using it for a particular purpose, a purpose that may well be protected under the First Amendment? In some cases, it won't be. That's the primary question here, because it is the board's job to set policy. And just because something is legal, just because something may pass constitutional muster, that doesn't mean it's right. So really, we hope that the BART board will take this opportunity to reaffirm the principles of free speech embodied in our First Amendment, embodied in our state constitution, that are really a core fundamental value and crucial to our constitutional democracy, and will, over the next couple weeks, develop a policy that ensures that this does not happen. BART does not shut down the cell phone network that is a modem of expression, that is used for political speech, as well as people calling home to check up on a babysitter or something like that, and make sure that that is not shut down except in the most extraordinary of circumstances. Thank you.
The next speaker is Edward Asbach.
My name is Edward Hasbrook, and I work with the Identity Project, papersplease.org, on issues of freedom of travel and movement. We're concerned that both your selective denial of access to cell phone service and your selective denial of access to BART transportation services reflect a disturbing failure to understand what it means to be a common carrier. As a common carrier, BART is required to provide transportation to all would-be passengers, just as a telecommunications common carrier is required to transport all customers' messages. A common carrier simply has no authority to refuse service to selected customers for any reason. If you believe that certain individuals pose such a threat as to justify restricting their access to common carrier services, whether of transport or communications, you have the same recourse I have if someone threatens to come to my house and kill me. I can't just close off my block to keep them off the street. I can go before a judge and ask them to issue a restraining order, as hundreds of people do every day in the BART service area. The proper venue, the place to present the arguments we've just heard is not to this board, but in a courtroom before a judge considering a motion or an injunction. Instead of using those existing legal mechanisms, you've taken matters into your own hands as vigilantes. It's unclear if the equipment that was shut down was licensed to BART or to cell phone companies. If it was licensed to BART, those licenses required prior approval of the FCC and or the CPUC before it could be turned off. If it was licensed to cell phone companies, turning it off was a criminal violation of 47 U.S. Code 333. And while selectively closing stations might not have been criminal, it exposes BART to potentially grave liability for violations of 42 U.S. Code 1983, which is specifically enacted to prohibit interference with federally guaranteed rights, such as the right of freedom of movement, which includes both the right to the public rights of way and the right to common carriers, by under color of state or local law. So I urge you to get out of this business entirely. If you think that there's a need for this kind of action, present those arguments to a judge with a petition for a restraining order or an injunction. This is not your job. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Chris Dahl.
So before I start, I have two speaker's cards in, one for three and one for four, just in case I go over. My name is Christoph. I'm with No Justice, No BART. I'm the guy that comes to your meetings, not anonymous to you, and I tell you the things you don't want to hear, and this won't be any exception. So what was the first thing your police officers did on the Fruitvale platform after they shot Oscar Grant in the back? They tried to confiscate video footage taken by passengers. I'll let that sink in for a moment. What was the first thing they did as an innocent man lay dying because of their lack of self-control and because of their mistake? Did they call an ambulance? Did they do CPR? Or did they run around the platform taking people's cell phones to prevent video of their actions from getting to the general public? Shutting us up didn't work then, and it's not going to work now. But that message doesn't seem to have gotten to you. You believe you can figure out a way to shield BART from accountability for the violent and deadly mistakes of your police. You believe the BART police force will eventually silence our demands for justice. And so you let them shut off cell service, endangering passengers. You let them also lock down stations on Monday, full of people closing metal gates over all of the entrances and exits, and then issuing a command to hundreds of people inside to immediately evacuate the station through a single door. God forbid, if there was an earthquake Monday evening, you would have had some serious hell to pay. So let me repeat. Your counter-protest strategy is not working. Bob, your wishful thinking notwithstanding, your police are not getting better at handling our protests. Your counter-protest strategy is failing miserably. And our protest strategies are working. You are learning what it feels like to be held accountable to the public. You are being forced to respond to criticism instead of hiding from it. And we know you don't care about public safety, because if you cared, you wouldn't barricade passengers in stations and then tell them to evacuate. And you wouldn't turn off their ability to call 911. And we know you don't care about the law, because if you did, you wouldn't violate the Constitution, the Fire Code, the California and FCC codes on communications. And we know, you do care about your image. We know you hate attention. And we know you hate it when people get a whiff of just how bad the BART administration stinks. My group has been around for 3 years. And we know that our protests, these protests, are the reason, the only reason you are even having this kind of a discussion right now. What we are doing is working. And since you're listening, for once, let me tell you what we're not asking. We are not asking you to improve your police services. Certainly there's a lot of room for improvement. You could stop letting your police get away with murdering passengers. You could hire a police chief who won't lie to the public. You could fire deranged racist cops like Marisol Domenici and Tony Peroni. But the time for making token improvements to your police force passed decades ago. We don't want your slightly improved version of a murderous, unaccountable, corrupt police force. So we aren't asking you to fix anything. We simply don't trust you to run a police force at all. And we also don't want you to improve your free speech policy. We already have a free speech policy. It's called the Constitution. And we didn't elect you to, nor would we trust you to, interpret our Constitution. And we're not asking you for permission to protest. We are going to do it anyway, regardless of your policies. Our free speech zone is wherever we happen to be standing. And we find it offensive and insulting that you even think you are entitled to determine what the constitutional limits on our freedom of speech and assembly are. So right now you want these protests to end, and you want to go back to business as usual. But there is no going back. Not if business as usual includes an out-of-control police department that brutalizes and murders innocent passengers. The protests will end when you disband your police force. Shutting down cell phones won't stop the protests. Arresting people won't stop the protests. Backing down and apologizing for turning off cell phone service, which is a good idea, won't stop the protests. If you want to stop the protests, disband your police force. And I know you feel a sense of loyalty to these cops. And who knows, deep down, some of them might be good people, and they might have kids to feed. But none of them have any business running around our trains with guns, and none of you have any business being in charge of anyone with a gun. And it's not a fringe opinion. Even Mayor Willie Brown, former SF Mayor Willie Brown, who's no fan of protesters, has stated publicly that BART cops aren't real police and shouldn't carry guns. And with that in mind, I'm going to tell you something really sad, something that should bring that full circle for you. At the murder trial of Johannes Messerli, it was revealed that the only resistance offered by Oscar Grant and his friends was a verbal protest of their mistreatment by the BART police. Specifically, we learned that what Oscar Grant said was, and I quote, "Why are you fucking with me? You guys aren't even real police." Sound familiar? It was upon hearing their authority challenged that these BART cops worked themselves into a frenzied, murderous rage. And in the end, we understand that BART police beat and executed Oscar Grant because he spoke out and criticized them. So your take-home message: no justice, no peace. Disband the BART police.
The next speaker is Austin Thomas.
Good morning. My name is Austin Thomas. I'm an employee here at the Bay Area Rapid Transit District. I am vice president of the BART chapter, SEIU Local 1021. President Arantes could not be here, but he asked that I speak for him. His message was simple: safety. Safety of the riders, safety of the public, safety of the workers, and even safety of the protesters. I've been here for 25 years. I know what it's like to be on that platform when there is nowhere to turn, when the possibility of bumping someone pushes them off the platform. It is a dangerous and an unsafe environment to have such a crowd there. I applaud the individuals. The union supports the individuals who organize. Well, I understand organizing. I understand protesting. But I would like to work with this board, the public, the patrons, the protesters, to bring about a safe resolution. Public safety is paramount for this board and for its unions. For the first article within the contract between us states that we will provide a safe and rapid transit to the public. We are the largest union, the BART chapter, on the property. We support the board. We support its actions. We support its police force, because it is that police force that responds when there's a medical emergency prior to the paramedics getting there. It is that police force that responds to bring order. I do not wish to pit one against the other. What I would like to see is that this forum be the forum for those who wish to protest, to have your grievances redressed here, to speak to the board and not create an unsafe public event. Thank you.
Thank you, Austin. The next speaker is Alex Kirkland.
Hello. I live in San Francisco, and I work in Oakland. I take part every day. I've taken it for the past 4 years, and a lot of people like me who commute using BART are upset over the lack of, the interruptions in BART services during these protests. And these interruptions are ultimately caused by your agency and your police force. Protests over Oscar Grant's shooting by BART police that were witnessed by everybody because they were on the internet, happened because police were not properly trained in de-escalation. All right. There were protests for years, and just as these protests were dying down, the BART police shot a homeless man on the platform in Civic Center, further inciting more public outrage. During a free, nonviolent assembly, you cut off cell phone service in the BART system explicitly with the purpose of quashing this free assembly. This is a tactic used by oppressive regimes in Iran and China. And by doing so, you re-galvanize people against your overreactions to public assembly. Furthermore, you weren't just closing BART platforms to demonstrations, you were closing entire stations, including the free areas of the BART station. Now let's talk pragmatically. No. Whether or not what you did was legal or not, whether you believe this is a public safety issue or not, your policies, your decisions, and your overreactions are inciting more and more people to protest your service and triggering more interruptions in service. And so until you learn to de-escalate situations and not incite them further, more and more people who use BART to commute are going to be upset with your interruptions in service. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cooper. Jean Hamilton.
My name is Jean Hamilton. I'm the president of ASPEN, Local 3993. My members include train controllers and transportation supervisors. We're on the front line along with SEIU and ATU, and our mission is to get our riders safely to the destination and on schedule. The district's mission is to provide a viable alternative to automobiles. We do that really well, but lately we've stumbled in our approach and in how we meet our schedule and how we meet our demands for safety. There's no denying that we could have done things a little differently, perhaps a little better. But I believe the protests and the attacks on our websites to be completely irresponsible and not related to safety or service. They're not in the best interest of anyone but the protesters. And I think the protesters need to find something more appropriate to do. I believe the conversations we've begun here over the last few years, over the last month, are appropriate and necessary. I also believe that's where our energy should be focused and not distracted every week by trying to keep our riders safe and on schedule and convinced that riding mass transit is the right thing to do. Thank you.
Good morning, I'm David. I report for IndyBay.org. I want to say to the general manager and others assembled and those who pick up, who repeat your messages in the media, enough with the safety mantra. No one has ever been hurt at a BART protest. No one. Even ones where the trains have been delayed by demonstrators. It just hasn't happened. It is hypothetical what you're talking about here. Somebody could have a heart attack, somebody this, somebody could that, somebody that. It's immoral to shred real constitutional rights based on hypothetical safety rationales. Stations are crowded all the time. You don't shut off cell phone service after an A's game. You're plenty crowded then. Lots of people are full of alcohol. There's fights break out. You know, I mean, come on. It has nothing to do with the stations being crowded. It's obvious that you're targeting protest activity. I'd also like to say you can't stop the protests as long as your police keep killing people. You're a public service, and that's a big vulnerability that you have. Mobile phones are not needed to protest BART. By shutting off the cell phone service, you're just making yourselves a target again. You're making a bad situation worse. Finally, I'd like to say something about the importance of what you're choosing to do today. You can take the position that you have the power to unplug cell phone service on a whim. Don't even wait until a situation is, you know, violates or risks safety or whatever. Just do it on hypotheticals again and take the position that let the court sort it out. I think that's the wrong position to take and set a bad precedent. If you don't forgo unplugging mobile antennas in the future, and this tactic creeps across the country and is used by other police forces to combat dissent, in 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, when this country looks more and more like a police state, you'll look back in shame at your decision today. And if you happen to be proud of your decision at the time, those who have lost their rights will not look kindly upon you. Your decision today is historic. Do the right thing on your own without being forced to.
Thank you, David. The next speaker is Mark McElroy.
Hello, my name is Martin Nicot. So you started off by saying you want dialogue, which sounds nice, but let's remember where this began, with Oscar Grant. And police accountability is bad everywhere, but it seems like it's especially a non-starter here at BART. And if it hadn't been for a riot in January 2009, Nesserly would not have spent a day in jail. I want to really let that sink in. We could do all the talking we want. People had to riot to have even the semblance of accountability for that policeman. So you can blame the rioters for being immature, or you can think about the deafness of the power structures. I think I'm willing to take you at your word. I have not participated in these recent protests. I'm coming to you here in the proper form, and we're speaking to you about it now. But I think you've made this an issue of free speech. This is very important to people. I don't agree with the hacking of websites. I don't think the release of personal information was warranted. But I understand the anger behind it, and I share in that anger, and I share in the concern. And I'm personally somebody who, at this point, is willing to do what it takes to make this issue a big one, and to make this clear. So I'm here asking you, I'm taking the first step, please, respect our free speech rights. Don't use the technical power you have to turn off the cell phone service for specific events or to prevent communication by specific people. But I think in the future, I definitely want to come out and will continue and will, you know, up and change the tactics that I'm using if you're going to block on this. I mean, you say you want dialogue, please actually listen. Please actually act on the information you're getting from people. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next speaker is Jacob Hoffman Andrews.
Hello. It's deeply disturbing that here, so close to the home of the free speech movement, we find ourselves in a debate about whether BART should be the forerunner of a new wave of anti-speech shutdowns. BART staff recently claimed an unprecedented power for themselves to shut off access to selected customers without due process of law. This is a power that is claimed by no police force, no transit agency, no other organization within the entire United States. New York MTA does not claim this right. The DC Metro does not claim this right. The LA transit system does not claim this right. There's a reason they do not claim this right, because it is illegal. The state of California and the Congress of the United States recognize a right to access to phone services. BART, despite perhaps owning the lines as an agent of the phone company, is covered by that right. Now, BART staff has made a mistake. They performed a possibly illegal action and set a highly negative precedent. Can you imagine what the police forces of our country would do with the power to shut down cell phone service at will? Clearly, it's a tremendously powerful, overly powerful tool to suppress protest, to apply discriminatory preferences against certain communities, and to shut down dialogue. So, our staff has made a mistake. They would like to establish their ability to continue to make that same mistake. You, as board members, it's your responsibility to tell staff that it was a mistake, they shouldn't do it again, nor should any other transit agency or police agency in our country follow in their footsteps. This is an important beachhead in the fight against free speech and against expression, and I hope you all take the right stand here. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. The next speaker is Lindsay Imani. Go ahead, Lindsay.
Good morning, members of the board. My name is Lindsay Imai. I'm with Urban Habitat. We're a regional environmental justice organization, and we are one of three organizations to file a Title VI complaint against a recent capital expansion project, the Oakland Airport Connector. The Federal Transit Administration, in their investigation of our complaint, not only found that BART had failed to do an equity analysis of that project, but that BART was also broadly non-compliant with Title VI requirements, including issues of public participation, limited English proficiency, access and participation, as well as policies regarding equity analyses of service changes and fare changes. Since that finding, we've been encouraged by efforts by BART to correct those specific deficiencies. However, we are very concerned by the recent decision to shut down cell phone service in response to demonstration on August the 11th. We also are concerned by the recent killing of a man by BART police, which puts into or throws into question how much reform and lessons have been learned since the Oscar Grant killing. We join others today condemning the decision to shut down the cell phone service. And we ask you to commit to creating a policy whereby you only shut down cell phone service in the most extraordinary circumstances. We certainly recognize and appreciate your desire to maintain the safety of your riders, of the system, your staff, and the public at large. However, we don't agree that shutting down cell phone service actually achieves that. I was also shocked by the description that Christoph gave as to how the demonstrations were dealt with in terms of closed exits, etc. So this clearly, addressing demonstrations or having some kind of strategy around demonstrations requires, a complete and robust conversation. So not only does shutting down cell phone service curb the ability of people to express themselves and is a recognized violation of free speech, it also curbs what we consider being a fundamental component of a democratic society, freedom of speech. And that, in a fundamental component to achieving an equitable and just society. So we ask you again today to take a strong stand in favor of democracy, to uphold civil liberties and civil rights, and pass a policy that really incorporates a thoughtful approach to addressing demonstrations, whether they are against BART or not. You have an opportunity today to address a really long-standing series of failures around civil rights, and we ask you to take that leadership. Thank you.
Thank you, Lindsay. The next speaker is Desla Patton.
President Franklin and BART Board of Directors, I'm Des Patton, President of the BART Professional Chapter of SEIU. The BART District has always worked hard to provide safe, reliable service in the Bay Area. We as Americans, of course, all support free speech and the right to protest. But we at BART are also concerned about the patrons' to safety. BART has always supported our patrons struggling with disabilities and provided a method for them to travel safely. However, recent protests have seriously threatened the safety of all, but particularly those disabled BART riders. Protesting on crowded platforms can push any patron, but especially those with disabilities, into moving trains or even off a platform. Patrons could be cut by flying glass if windows were to be broken. How many patrons could suffer if protesters had started a fire in the underground station? These are serious things that could happen. Recently, we even provided safety protection to a protester by preventing them from climbing on top of the train. If that protester had been managed to getting on top of the train, had slipped off the other side, and falling on the third rail, that protester would have been fried. We would like to thank the district management, the board, BART police, and law enforcement for all their efforts to try and keep the BART system safe. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next speaker is Jonathan Baer. Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning, board members, and thank you for your time and for holding this meeting. There's been a lot of talk about, my name is Jonathan Baer. I'm the immediate past chair of the City of Oakland Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee. There's been a lot of talk today about safety, but the fact is that cutting cell phone service does not promote safety. cell phone service was instituted on BART in the wake of the September 11th attacks, when the public realized the tremendous safety benefits of a dispersed communications network. The cutting cell phone service jeopardizes people's safety by eliminating their ability to communicate with one another. The reliable evidence that's been cited of a dangerous demonstration on August 11th is clearly wrong. There was no protest on August 11th. There was certainly no imminent threat to public safety. And furthermore, there has been no evidence presented that cell phone service shutting down is an appropriate, reasonable, and effective response to the safety concerns that have been discussed today. We have seen some very serious security holes in BART's internet presence that have allowed, with guessable passwords, that have allowed people to hack in and reveal the passengers' and the employees' personal information. And I think that's something that this board needs to address. I am concerned about the accountability of this organization over the decision to cut cell phone service. Decisions were made by staff, and as far as we know, the board did not explicitly approve them. By not firing anyone over this, you're strongly implying your approval of the cell phone service shutdown. But without a public vote, the voters cannot hold you accountable. The voters deserve to know exactly what your position is. And so, to make it clear that this organization is run by the elected board, not by the police, not by the spokespeople, you should vote up or down on whether the actions on August 11th were appropriate. That's the sort of accountability that the public expects from an elected board. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chelsea. The next speaker is, I hope I pronounced this correctly, Asa Dodsworth.
Good morning. It's interesting to be here in this building today. Never been here before. There's a reason I am. My name is Asa Dodsworth. I'm from Berkeley, California, born and raised. We've seen protests before in this nation. We've got a long history of protests. Protests started, arguably, before this nation was established. In fact, it's hard to argue that our particular nation, premised on individual rights such as free speech, right to assemble, and due process, was established by and for protesters. Which brings us back to protest, which we've seen before. We've in fact seen protests on BART, and protests in the parade areas, and protests on the platform Civic Center before. We've seen the protests more and more over the last few years on BART, starting with the public execution of Oscar Grant on the platform paid area, January 1st, 2009. And then, you know, the protest resurged with the execution of the homeless man Charles Hill on a paid platform area on BART. And a fair portion of your ridership and a fair portion of your electorate believes that BART thinks it can get away with the public execution of minorities and the poor. Which brings us to police accountability. The most common complaint against police, I studied the community policing at Merritt College. They have a class for police by police. The public's allowed to attend, but it's the police class on community policing. The most common complaint against police is rudeness. Now, the actions that have alienated your ridership and your electorate appear to be far more than simple rudeness. Those videos don't lend themselves well to interpretation. There is a solution to public discontent. There is a solution to rudeness. There is a solution to police misconduct, even. There is a solution to the public appearance of rudeness. There's a solution to the public appearance of execution on paid platform areas. It's what Rampart LA used during the Rampart scandal. It's police review, a police review commission. And it's not a new idea. It's a 30-year-old idea, and it's been effective. It hasn't ended police misconduct. It's only 30 years of history, ultimately, and a very long history. but it's a start, and it provides an effective forum to find effective and reasonable solutions, which brings us to solutions. And the solutions your security forces have been providing you. The security forces have not provided, by the way, any specific examples of protesters injuring anyone. When you talk about solutions, it's important to, you know, think about the problems they're talking about. Nobody's specifically injured yet, and the long history of BART, protests on BART, etc. So, without injuring anyone, your security forces have recommended an unprecedented shutdown of cell phone service. Excuse me, when I say unprecedented, I mean in the United States of America. These shutdowns are not unprecedented in communist China. They are not unprecedented in communist police state North Korea. And they are not unprecedented in the Middle Eastern feudal states, recently brought to our attention by the Arab Spring. And these communist police states have not been silent on the issue. And these feudal states in the Middle East have not been silent on the issue. They agree with you. They agree with the shutdown of cell phone services. They agree with the shutdown of social media services. They agree with the suppression of free speech. There are alternative solutions. Fire bad legal advice. One, fire bad security advice. Two, fire bad PR. Three, abandon PR as a solution to protest. Police Review Commission. Currently, under an errant recent judicial decision, police review commissions are barred from being public under widespread protests from police review and police agencies across the state. This is a state of California issue, not a federal issue. Because the police review commissions being public enabled a public forum to find solutions. And not necessarily end police misconduct overnight, but to find and explore solutions. Police review commissions are not forbidden, the public ones currently, because of this errant judicial decision. BART can establish a police review commission right now. BART can work to make that a public police review commission. You can be the thing that brings that back, because we need it, and you need it.
Thank you very much. And we did establish it this year, and there's a couple of public commissioners here in the audience today, too. What's it?
Barely hear you.
We did establish a citizen review board.
My name is Linda Drechtel. I am from the Deaf Counseling Advocacy and Referral Agency. Imagine this. Our supervising attendant sees a suspicious package and determines that there is sufficient danger to declare an emergency. Ask yourselves, how does that attendant alert deaf and hard of hearing travelers in the station of the emergency? How do the deaf and hard of hearing passengers in a train that is in the station, how are they alerted of the emergency? Incoming trains are stopped. How do you alert the deaf and hard of hearing passengers of the emergency? Three simple questions. There are 36 million Americans with hearing loss or who are deaf. If you look to the right of you and to the left of you, one of you, by the statistics, will have lost your hearing or a great portion of it by age 60. Has BART kept up? The response of BART to date has merely been to provide phone apps and text messages. Now, you read in the paper, they are willing to do away with that in this emergency to stop the resistance, the protests. Is that acceptable? You are hurting one third of the people who will now not have any communication access. Assuming the fact that all of those people have the ability to text and have access to applications. BART has the habit of responding to safety issues in a reactionary mode. You need to prepare ahead of time. any compliance with Americans with Disabilities Act has always been in response to lawsuits. Anything else is just deferred. BART has a black eye in public opinion. Yet it is a public transit system. It receives federal, state, and local funds. It is time that BART management be held accountable and not allow BART to... BART to simply consider those whose lives they consider dispensable, on the side, not having sued yet, to simply be collateral damage. Thank you.
Thank you. The next speaker is Internet Parties.
Good morning, President Franklin. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen of the board. I'm Antoinette Bryant. I'm the president of business agent of ATU Local 1555, representing station agents, train operators, poll workers, clerical, employee development specialists, and central representatives. I come here today after my three predecessors but the three other presidents from five unions that are here. And I am speaking with regard to not only the cell phone issue, but the issue that is a microcosm of a problem that I see. The cell phone issue, I think it's done. And I think everybody here knows that it was a mistake. I think that the board should be applauded with the fact that they're having the meeting, that there's a plan that's going to be in place, and that's the problem. There was no strategic plan in advance so that people would know what was going on. But in listening to some of the people that have come and addressed the board, I feel that I need to address some things that may have been misstated, or it's a misrepresentation or misconception. With regard to passengers not jumping on trains, I've been a station agent for 20 years. I've been a BART rider for over 30 years. I have seen passengers fall in the trackways. I have seen passengers as a station agent jump from a high-level platform on top of a train while the train's moving. So to suggest that Mr. Overseer's comments about something that didn't happen might not happen, I've seen it happen. So his comments should be taken into account. It's a serious situation that we, as employees that are witnessing this, I've seen it. Other coworkers of mine have seen it. They've seen people fall and have been unable to stop their trains from running over people. And those people were trying to commit suicide. When you have crowded platforms, that is a safety issue. It's an issue that needs to be addressed. So for those people that don't think if this is something that could happen, I beg to differ. I know that you are aware of circumstances that have occurred. And as the president of the union that represents the majority of the frontline workers, we have a concern. We have a concern about the fact that there is no strategic plan. We have a concern about the lack of communication. But we have a concern about the ridership and the public. Our job is your job. We take pride in the fact that we are responsible for getting people to and from in a safe, reliable manner. When people come into the system with paid tickets, I understand the protesters came in with tickets. I believe and am a strong advocate of free speech, but when you interrupt the rights of others, that has to be taken into question. This is the forum that you've set up. This is the forum I would like to see people come and speak to what their issues are, not to come into a station where people are trying to get home. People have things that they are doing, and you interrupt that by saying whatever you have to say. I think that it is my hope that the board will set up a plan that will include passengers, that will include frontline employees in the process to have some sort of plan involved. With regard to evacuating stations, I've had to evacuate stations with fires. I've had to evacuate stations when there's been a disturbance. And if you don't evacuate them through one exit, there's a possibility of someone being left. So where people may have the misconception of, oh, that was horrible, there's a reason for it. But if people don't know it, they're assuming that an action was taken that jeopardized safety, when in fact that action is trying to protect the safety of the people inside of that station. Because if you know there's only one way out, We can police the station to make sure everyone gets out off trains in a efficient manner. So I needed to speak to those issues. I made a request that someone from the outside come in and look at what BART has been doing with regard to some instances that have taken place. I am not deviating from that request. I am, however, applauding the board for taking this action and absolutely willing and able and ready to work with the board, with BART management, with the public to enact a strategic plan to have in place when these kind of situations take place. I would ask the protesters to think about the people that they're, when they come to make a protest, think about the people you're impacting when you do that protest. I would ask you to take into account that there are other avenues that you can use to make those concerns known. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The last blue slip that I have is for Sanji Honda.
I have two cards in. One is for closed session, one for the open session, and they're interrelated. Would you like me to address all at once? Or? Okay. For the record, I'm Sanjeev Hanna, East Bay News Service. Let me first just give you a few of my way of background. East Bay News Service will be celebrating its 20th anniversary. We're in our 20th year, starting Operation January 70, 1992. And I actually started my news business, part of that, in January of 1972, so it's almost 40 years. The first BART employee I met was Mike Healy, his second day on the job. And I've been writing BART since the port opened because you were kind enough to give us media access 2 weeks prior to the actual terror operations, so we could get to know the system. The first thing I would note, and I'm going to speak only to process, because I have plenty of forums to give my opinions and all those sorts of things. And it's important we get here only to have to process. So, number one, I have run spring break in Daytona Beach. Where 1.1 million mostly drunk college students congregate for a 10 to 14 day period with security forces of 600 to 1,000 police officers and 2,000 additional security personnel. I've gone to the Oakland City Council meetings, only just one meeting in 20 years. And that was the night I was getting an award, so I had to go. And I have never seen this kind of show of strength at a city council meeting. I counted 18 uniformed officers. I'm sure there are more on the side of the room than elsewhere. I have somebody counting the cars that are outside and all those sorts of things. And the important thing is that that sends a message. It should have been more discreet. You should have two or three officers, have everyone else waiting in the wings. This creates an intimidating presence. So that's point one. Point two is you're doing this meeting at 9 o'clock in the middle of the week, where even two of your own directors, who are actually paid, cannot make it. BART needs to look at doing meetings that are convenient to the public at large. Thirdly, in my 40 years of writing BART, I will say this. Your police officers are your best PR agents. And I have interaction only primarily with police officers and with station agents. Very few other personnel, so those are who I'm judging it on. But other than one station operator who it's always a joy to get onto a BART train during football season to hear him shout out that we're now arriving at the Oakland Coliseum Raiders station. It's hammer time. They're generally just sort of nondescript and doing their job. The station agents tend to be quite varied, and many of them are rude, and the service is really lacking. That may be what the person from ATU said, their president, that there are mitigating circumstances, but I've had one station agent threaten me, where I actually had to call both the FBI and the Hayward Police, to have them come out to deal with that agent, because BART was not available. You've got 206 officers, and that is a pretty large force. I remind you that you started with a premise in 1968, 69, 1970, that the station, the trains would be running every 2 or 3 minutes, and there would be no train operators. And the software you selected and the problems with the system created some problems. So with that as a background, let me address 4 points, process-wise. First one is the shutoff of the cell phones. You are a public entity, and for your staff to take on that responsibility or that decision, make that, is something that should be dealt with in closed session as a personnel review matter. I'll leave it at that. But that is something you should schedule as a closed session discussion, as a part of the performance review of the general manager and the police chief. I won't comment here as to what issues ought to be discussed, but that's the first step. Secondly, you want to look at and revisit the Ralph M. Brown Act, the state open meetings law that has been in effect since 1953. And one of the provisions it provides is section 54950 through 54972 of the government code. For those who do not want to find it, you go to legendinfo.ca.gov and type in Brown Act, it will bring up the current version. And there's a provision in there that states very clearly that prior to the acquisition, disposal of any real estate, or entering into any decision to buy, sell, lease, or otherwise deal with the property, there must be public notice and a public hearing on the feasibility of the transaction. In the BART records, I cannot find any record of any such notice. I certainly cannot find any record when you entered into agreements with the cellular services. When you entered into all these things, your promise was, we're going to give our customers a better experience. Oakland Airport did the same thing. Well, what they did is they charged $9.95 a day until the market caught up with them, and then they had to go to free Wi-Fi. And the only reason they were able to go to the free Wi-Fi is I had suggested to the port attorney that at some point the city of Oakland was going to put in a free service, and there was a provision that put it in that contract. So you should review your contract to look at what the basis is and whether your staff has the actual authority without a board policy to actually order such a such an act of turning off the cell phone service. I spent about 2 hours last night and several hours in the week before that touring your system. I spent yesterday at Powell Street and Montgomery stations, considered some time talking to passengers and just taking photos of people minding their own business on cell phones, dealing with emergencies or notifying somebody at home. All of that was taken away that day when the service was cut off. The panic that ensued, I know of two people that lost their jobs because they could not contact their employer, but another will be late. I'm sure there are other situations like that that will come up. None of that has been taken into account. I counted today, and I'm sure the numbers are changing and varying, but I did a head count, 89 people, 32 members of the media, 18 BART police, 14 various BART staff, and I think there are three or four other non-uniformed people. So that would leave about 21 members of the public. Let's say it's 30, given how many speakers you had, because people are coming and going. But that is an incredible amount of staff resources for that small of a public turnout. And again, I reiterate that it is because it's in the middle of the day. Streaming video is wonderful. You know, people go and look at the archives, but that does not allow people to meaningfully participate in a meeting when a decision is going forward. And then the final thing I want to address as a part of this is that you have a number of issues as an agency that need to be addressed. You need to review your procedures top to bottom. I went to the County Board of Supervisors about 3 weeks ago for a meeting, and there was a minor issue with noticing, and I mentioned to the County Administrator, Susan Murnishi, what the issue was. And she said, we'll take care of it right now. I don't want to be in your province. And just to lose the trust aid for you, agencies that see me coming do not like to see me. And the main reason for that is that I don't have the limitations the mass media has. I don't have the limitations of only having to put in a 40-hour work week and then I'm off the clock. I can devote a year, 2 years, 5 years. I've been pursuing some issues in the Port of Oakland for now 11 years. It took 19 years to get some records from the City of Oakland. You had to go through the State Attorney General's office, three Attorney Generals, before those records were released. So as long as I'm alive, I'm going to keep being very persistent. And in that regard, there are several issues. The first is you want to look at enhancing public access to your meetings. Don't look at the City of Oakland Sunshine Ordinance, which is there just for lip service. Look at San Francisco County, look at Contra Costa County, look at the model ordinance developed by the California First Amendment Coalition. Call somebody like Peter Scheer, their executive director, or Terry Frank, executive director of Californians Aware. Let them give you some feedback. They'll do it for free, it won't cost you anything, in terms of how you can enhance public access, how you can have better compliance with the open meeting laws. Let me close by saying two things. The first is, the Brown Act is very clear that people do not surrender anything to elected officials or appointed staff. That is why the Brown Act was enacted in 1953. And the second thing is that that is, in the terms of the legislation, minimal, M-I-N-I-M-A-L, the very bare minimum you have to do. And in many cases, unfortunately, that has not been achieved, as we discovered the last meeting. We've already made a couple of corrections to your procedures. So I'm going to be starting a top-to-bottom review of all your noticing. I'm going to be looking at who is agenda subscribers, whether notice for special meetings have been sent to all the media. And as you know, well, it may not have heard yesterday, but the Oakland Tribune will be no more as of November the 2nd. All the papers, newspapers, this side of the Calicot Tunnel will be merged into a new entity called the East Bay Tribune. And all the ones that side of the tunnel will go into the Contra Costa Times. That is of great importance to you because you're now paying for advertising that number of papers. When you pay for, say, the Alameda Times Star, the Oakland Tribune, and the Herald Review, and they all appear on the same page, you pay three times for the same ad. So there will be some issues there.
And I'll start with that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any more public speakers? Okay, board members. Any comments?
Thank you, and I thank all the speakers for coming in. For BART, another transit agency, the First Amendment is foremost about the right of people to peaceably. BART is obligated to provide safe, reliable transportation for everyone, including protesters. On the eve of the Iraq invasion, I traveled on BART to join the largest protest ever. That was on February 18, 2008 in San Francisco. On August 11th, this month, this year, BART took what I believe at the time was a prudent action to protect passengers. We must guard First Amendment freedom of speech. And this will become a landmark case. We must also guard against the drift toward a police state. First Amendment scholars have shared that emergency measures are warranted only in very narrow instances involving imminent threat. Neither speculation about a protest nor mere disruption of train service, nor other illegal activity by itself constitutes a risk of passenger safety that would warrant interrupting cell service. Thank you.
Yes, Vice President McCartland.
Okay. We had some speakers that were very poignant in their issues, and a lot of those issues will be further, you know, investigated and looked into from both a policy standpoint and everything else. But two things that really come home to me about the issues of freedom of speech and some of our speakers are concerned was in relationship to the public should continue to have the right to not only have demonstrations but also put themselves in a position where they can hope to coordinate activities, and that's why we should using cell service and basically have freedom of speech rights with using the cell service that BART is providing in order to enhance that activity. While I personally am cautious about supporting such activity as to its legality, as long as it's legal and it's safe, I have no problem with that. But some of the speakers were talking about closing down stations, and that shouldn't happen. I find it very difficult to believe that those people, if the, as Paul Overshear has stated, and as one of our speakers has stated, that people have been pushed into trackways and someone were to be injured or killed, I doubt if any of those people who are advocating that would accept responsibility for precipitating that, but rather they would hold BART accountable for not properly supervising and having protective measures in place. For the short run, in relationship to the First Amendment issues, and as Matt Burroughs has stated, that we provide that service in free areas, but in the paid areas, it potentially can end up being at the will of BART. I would like to propose that we place on our website and that the board adopts a policy of, and perhaps even have signage in the stations, three simple bullets in relationship to the issue of cell coverage inside BART and paid areas. And they are as follows. BART provides cell coverage as a courtesy to our patrons in paid areas. Second bullet. BART reserves the right to suspend cell service for reasons of public safety, law enforcement, homeland security, and system maintenance. And number three, if cell service is not available in an emergency, contact the train operator by the car intercom system or use the station white courtesy telephone. Before we actually had cell service, and we've been progressively getting it, first starting off with, I believe it was Sprint and then Verizon and a few others, we've only had cell service in the underground area for a very short period of time. And while it's a vehicle for free speech in relationship to providing services for emergencies when they occur by using those courtesy telephones, as well as the intercoms in on the BART cars. Over the years, we have done quite well in trying to provide for the safety of our patrons. And I think that these three bullets or signage placed in BART would end up providing that kind of at least a temporary solution until this is looked over and reviewed in detail by the FCC. I agree with Director Rayburn. This is the beginning of a review from a national perspective on this entire issue, and I look forward to seeing the debate and the results of that. But in the meantime, we still have to provide for the safety of our patrons, and overcrowding to the point of putting the lives of innocent people who happen to be in the wrong place at the right time when something bad occurs simply because of overcrowding is not acceptable. And I, for one, promote the idea of seeing to it that we maintain our ability to control cell service until we have the opportunity to have looked at from a legislative perspective. Thank you.
Thank you, President Franklin. I want to thank you personally for convening this meeting. I think it was an important step for BART to take, and your leadership in this issue has been commendable. What we're seeing is what happens when two rights collide, the right to safety and the right to free speech. That's what we acted on as a agency when we thought those two rights were at a collision point. This board was briefed on this issue. There should be no mistake about that. Staff brought the issue to this board, and we understood what was going to occur. Frankly, if I had had the letter from the ACLU in my possession when we had that that briefing, I would have asked more questions, because I think the letter, especially the most recent letter, I think outlines the issue in a very informative way. There are times when this may be appropriate, but I think we should err on the side of not allowing it, the suspension of cell phone service, as is pointed out by the ACLU letter and other communications that I received. That is something that is a right that once we get it in the direction and allowed cell phone service to be utilized in the district, we have to protect that right going into the future. There are lots of good arguments on both sides of this, and I've heard them all. I've had the luxury of being out of town for 10 days, so maybe I haven't been inundated as the rest of my colleagues, but from a distance, I've had the luxury of hearing many of the arguments supporting both sides of the issue. This was well-intentioned. We wanted to ensure that our riders are safe and have a secure, reliable trip home. Many people leave work in San Francisco, headed for the East Bay and elsewhere. The last thing they want is a shutdown in the system, whether it's caused by a protest, whether it's caused by failed equipment, whether it's caused by anything else that might delay their trip. They just want to get home safe and reliable. And that's our core business at BART. We are focused on providing safe and reliable transportation to our riders who have come to rely on us for a way to get around the Bay Area, which is increasingly becoming congested. And so from my standpoint, what I like to see us do, we spend a year and a half working on a citizen review board, and I see at least three members in the audience. I won't embarrass them by identifying who they are unless they care to stand up and be identified, because I'm frankly I'm proud of the fact that they're willing to do this on our behalf. These folks, along with eight other people, constitute the Citizen Review Board at BART, which we created, this board created, in response to the tragedy that occurred in the Oscar Grant shooting. So we've taken very affirmative steps. I'll give Director Vrdulovic credit for this. I'm going to steal his idea, but I'm going to give him credit for it nonetheless. I think during the course of the three of us with Director Ward Allen with the Police Review Committee, we held many meetings with the community, and through the course of this, we came up with a model that included the independent auditor. And Mark, would you mind standing? You're an employee. I can embarrass you. So I don't want to embarrass volunteers unless they're willing to be embarrassed. But we came up with this model, not perfect, but allows us to review actions of the police department. And during the course of the discussion, which was lengthy, Director Vrdulovic said many times, and I agree with him, that we should not only use this in response to things that go wrong, but we should use this to review policy that we're considering as part of the way we do business as a police agency. So, Mr. President, with your concurrence and the concurrence of the board, I would really like this issue to go before the Citizen Review Board. I'd like them to look at the materials that's been submitted to us today. I'd like for them to consider the comments that were made today, review what's a good alternative, and come back to this board, because this 11-member body represents the totality of the BART district. Each of us had the opportunity to appoint one person to the district, so it represents the divergent point of views in the BART district. See if they can struggle as a group, come up with a policy that we can consider. I will say to the three members here, if I don't like what you do, I'm going to vote against you, but I'm confident that you are thoughtful people that can take this issue on and can come forward with something that will allow us to try to preserve both of those rights. The right to free speech, which I don't question at all. People have a right to use their cell phone. They should, if there's cell phone service area, they should expect that there'll be that service will be available. But we also have to deal with what is clearly that imminent danger in extraordinary circumstances. We have to deal with that because there may be some times rare that we'll have to take some action. So, if it's with the concurrence of the president of the board and the board of directors in general, I think this would be an important beginning of the Civilian Review Board looking at important policies that affect the police department and affect our riders.
I follow that up. Director Sweet and then Director Murray and Director Durant.
Thank you, President Franklin. And again, I do also applaud you for taking the extraordinary step of making sure that this meeting is called today. I'm going to start where I have some questions for staff, but I think I need to address Director Keller's recommendation first, because we have a brand new Civilian Review Committee, and we have taxed them with a lot of things up front. I don't think this board needs to shirk its duty in creating policy. I think we can work with the Civilian Review Board, but I think it's our job as the elected policymakers to work on this issue. It's far too important, and we are held far too accountable to pass it off to someone else or to any other group. So that being said, Director Keller, I really appreciate what you said, and I think it was well-intentioned, but I don't think it's the way we need to go on this issue. Now, I do have some questions for staff that I'd like to start with. We had this thing happen on August 11th where the cell phones were shut off. Can you explain to me the chain of command that went into making that decision? I'm talking to staff. Yeah. Well, I'm asking staff publicly because I don't think everyone has read the letter, Director Blaylock.
Throughout the suite, you fired me and charged me with responsibility of providing public safety and law enforcement services for the district. So any criticism, anger, frustration at what occurred falls on my shoulders. I'm accountable for that decision.
Okay. And Chief Rennie, there is no criticism here. I'm just trying to figure out what happened and why, because, again, policymaking board sitting over here is going to be held accountable for what's gone on, and I just need to know, and I need to understand what went into getting this decision out to the public.
Director Sweet, excuse me. ultimately, I authorized the chief's decision, or the chief's action in this, and it was based on my concern for the fact that it appeared that the demonstration was going to involve illegal activity, which was going to present a very serious threat to the safety of our patrons. And as the interim general manager, I have a great responsibility to try and provide safety to all of the riding public. So while it was a recommendation from the police, I ultimately authorized that decision.
Well, as a former general counsel for BART before coming back in this new capacity, were you or was anyone in consultation with our legal department on the ramifications of what turning off cell phones would do?
Well, the discussion took place with counsel in the room. This is an issue which, from my own experience, when there's an imminent danger of a threat to violation of law, there is legal authority to curtail free speech. Not all free speech is protected. There are some very narrow exceptions, and I believe this to be one of them.
Okay, so in your opinion, what we were going to experience on August 11th fit that definition of narrow to turn off the cell phones? It was narrow enough to turn off the cell phones. Okay. Were we in contact at any time with the FCC or the CPUC or any other governmental agency that would have jurisdiction over cell phone usage? Well, prior to the decision being made, no, we didn't. Have we contacted them since the decision was made? And, I can't hear you.
Yes, we've been in contact with the FCC.
And the California Public Utilities Commission?
I'm not aware of whether we have been.
There's a PUC hearing scheduled for late September.
On this issue?
I don't know if it's just this issue. They've asked for us to come, myself and our independent auditor, Mark Smith. I'm sorry, Lynn, no.
Okay. Thank you. I have more questions. One of the speakers actually brought up an issue that I don't think we fully put into our thinking when we went forward with this, and that was the ADA compliance. Now, if we are looking at being totally compliant in all areas, and we know that hearing impaired people are using their cell phones and other touch-type devices to communicate, did we put that in the equation before deciding to shut off cell phones?
I think there are a number of alternates for besides cell phone service for ADA compliance in terms of our station signage, the fact that we had numerous BART personnel available on the platforms. We have provided many additional police personnel as well as supervisors there. So as far as the cell phone service, no, but I think we had a very adequate safety provision for all people there, and that is we have sufficient staff who were equipped with radios to provide assistance in the event anyone had questions, including those with disabilities.
Okay, I guess I'm just speaking to the totally hearing impaired, but I think the strategy, and if I heard you correct, the strategy was to use our additional personnel to deal with that aspect of shutting off the cell phones, that people who were hearing impaired had our staff there ready to communicate via whatever means.
Right. We had lots of additional staff on the platforms to provide assistance to all of our patrons, including those who have disabilities.
Okay. I guess for me, and I don't think I've been quiet on this issue because it is such a huge issue, safety for BART patrons is important, and we want to keep our patrons safe. But as a policymaker for this agency, not really being in on a decision to do something as drastic as shutting off cell phones has really made me look back on, did we learn any real lessons from 2009? Now, we were able to go out, we were able to talk to the public, we were able to get really valid input. That's why we have the Civilian Review Board. That's why we have people who are now looking over our police department for us. I get that, but we learn, I guess, the appropriate lesson after 2009, because if we had, on July 3rd, we had a prime opportunity. Yes, it was a tragic event when Mr. Hill was shot, but we had a prime opportunity at that point to be a lot more proactive and talk to the public about what changes had actually taken place within our police department. A lot of folks are condemning BART or something that happened in 2009 and equating that to what just happened in 2011. It's not fair, it's not right, but it is what it is. That's where we are in the lifespan of BART. We have to combat this public relations nightmare that we created in 2009. Now, Chief Rainey, a lot of good things have happened under your watch. We have more training in place. You have new deputies, you have new commanders. I mean, you have a lot of things going on that are positive that we could have reached out to the public to let them know that as tragic as Charles Hill's killing was, our police officers are not the same police officers in place back in 2009. There's a whole new mindset. We had a perfect teaching opportunity that we kind of bypassed. And as a lot of the speakers spoke about, that was our problem. Instead of fixing a situation, we have escalated it to the point of, we don't know how we're ever going to get rid of protesters because they're protesting for the right reason. We're not talking to folks the right way. And we got to fix that. And we now have a prime opportunity to do it. And I'm glad that our Civilian Review Board members are here today because they play an important part in this. They play an important part in getting us to the point where we can be credible to the public again. Because right now, forgive me, but we're not. I mean, this board did not have an opportunity to vote on an actual policy, which I hope we do today, which I hope we at least bring. We can't vote on it today, but we can certainly bring that idea to the forefront. We can certainly start talking more about what we do in dire emergencies, because right now we're not there. And just thinking about what some of the folks said, Christoph, I may not agree with all the time, but he said something that was so on point. Our counter-protest strategy is simply not working. Why aren't we trying to engage these folks in a dialogue to figure out what will it take
to get these protests to stop? It's a real simple question. What will it take? And no, disbanding our police force is not the way we're going to go. I mean, I could say that just knowing that in this post 9/11 world we live in, we need a police force. And you can see that our police force is changing for the better. It may not be happening as fast as we want it to happen, but it is changing. And Chief Rainey, I'll give you full credit for that because accountability is on you and you've accepted it. But we've got to do better. We've got to be more proactive and talk to folks. We're not doing that. So can we now look at moving forward the right way? Can we now start looking at saying we're sorry? We made a mistake and we're sorry. Because it's obvious from the number of emails that I've gotten, it's obvious from the number of articles I've read, and it's obvious from the number of speakers here today that First Amendment rights and the right to have a communication channel are what people are looking for because it's a part of this democratic society we live in. Each and every one of us on this board of directors had to take that oath that said that we were going to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. And that includes every amendment. We don't get to pick and choose what it is we're going to protect and defend. And we need to defend the First Amendment right for people to protest us, for people to use whatever communication link they have. And we can't sit back like some big brother and say, well, we're going to stop you because either we don't like the message or we're going to spin it and say it's all about safety. We can't do that anymore. We're not in that world anymore. We lost that right in 2009, and we have to start building our credibility back up again. And it can only happen with open, direct, clear, honest dialogue with the public, which we need to start engaging in. And I'm sorry if I'm coming off a little too hard, but it really is frustrating to know that I, as a board member, will be held accountable for a staff decision. And it's not one that should be made that way ever again.
Thank you.
Well, I guess I may be done because I'm trying to ensure that we hear people and we talk to people. I was really proud that the ACLU took the time to write to us and tell us of their concerns. And Mr. Rizzo, I know you're still here. He said something that this board needs to really pay attention to, and that is we don't ever want to take something away. But if we're going to shut off cell phone service ever, it needs to be under the most extraordinary circumstances. It needs to be for the most valid of reasons that I equate to 9/11 level, not the protests that we thought were going to happen on August 11th. It can't do that. And I am going to be firmly talking about this. And if we were to vote on a policy, that's exactly where I would come from with it. It has to be a dire emergency. We can no longer just sit back and say, we don't like what you have to say, and we're going to stop you from saying it. We have to be mindful of the fact that in the United States of America, with the democracy that we want to talk about, we don't get to stop people from communicating with one another, even if it is for protest.
Thank you.
Director Sweet. I certainly appreciate your comments and respect them. And before the Charles Hill incident occurred, I have reached out to various groups that the Bay Area Rapid Transit District services. And actually one of the groups that has spoken today that has been critical of us, and I want to identify that group unless they want to be identified. And I've asked them to expand our conversations with other people who are critical of us if they want to, if they can, if they have that ability. I certainly agree with your comments that dialogue is best in order to stave off any type of misunderstandings, miscommunications. It is not our intent to spin this in any way, shape, form, or fashion. Nor was it ever our intent to stop this group from protesting. That's not what we were trying to do at all.
Hey, Franny, I actually sat in a meeting with you with a group from Oakland called Safety First. And basically what you were doing at that time, and I think what we were all doing, was trying to look for another way of having an extra level of protection for our patrons and our employees in our stations. And that was a very proactive way of looking at things, because this group, I guess, was doing some work with Oakland PD out in the Koreatown area and had been successful. See, those are the kind of things that people need to hear about. You are proactive. You are trying to make things better. You are trying to do something different. I can definitely see a change in the police department, but we got to communicate that. We got to be able to communicate to people that we are doing things differently, and we are trying to take this past where we were back in 2009. And we can't get there by pouring more gas on our own fires, by starting a protest when none needed to be had. And I remember now, I did have another question. And this question had to do with the hacking of our website and whether or not we have actually taken the appropriate precautions with respect to the number of outside vendors who have access to our computer system. Have we appropriately vetted them to ensure that they get it and what can and cannot be shared? We need to know that, because the hacking of our computers is also very serious, but have we left ourselves open to people from the outside who have nothing whatsoever to do with BART other than being an outside contractor, giving them access to our information and our passwords?
Well, immediately upon the hack in the district, they had contacted the FBI and the California. Immediately upon the hack in the district, they had contacted the FBI and I won't mess up their name, but the California Cybersecurity Institution, and have been working with them on both making sure that the security going forward with our outside vendors is up to par, as well as working with them and all of the chief for this to provide the details, but to try and determine exactly not just how this happened, but who did it and how to prevent it from happening, and who the district has taken proactive steps and continues to.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, because I'm more interested in the going forward part, because, again, password protection for an organization like BART is far too important. What if they had hacked, and again, I'm doing a hypothetical like I don't like to hear us do, but what if they had hacked something more valuable to this institution as opposed to the My BART space? I mean, think about it. We could open ourselves up to some real issues, and that needs to be addressed in a very real way. And I'm really talking about the issue of the outside contractors, vetting them properly to ensure that we don't have somebody who we would rather not have our information in their hands. Mm-hmm.
This issue has been very emotional for me as well, and I agree with Director Sweet that it needs to be come to the board as a policy in consultation with our Citizens Oversight Committee, but it is a board issue. And so I wrote down a lot of things that I thought that I had in reading hundreds of emails, articles, things sent to me from the United Kingdom. Just everywhere, I really immersed myself in this issue. Obviously, it isn't an easy issue, because I wrote down what your suggestions were for us to handle the protest. Don't cut cell phone usage. Allow free speech anywhere, even on the platforms. Don't shut stations. Train the police to negotiate with the protesters. Disband the police. None of those seem very workable. We still have the issue of the protesters. And as a matter of fact, you heard today that no matter what we do about the cell phone service, they have committed themselves to protest until we disband our police department. I don't, as Director Sweet said, I don't believe that that's a viable option. I don't think we should disband our police department. Chief Rainey has been sending us the police posts, and I just brought a few of them here today. On August 21st, there was a domestic violence battery and robbery arrest at Fruitvale Station. On August 21st, there was a robbery with a gun outside the Ashby Station. There was a theft of, on August 21st, there was a theft of a bicycle, and this the police created a sting through Craigslist and regained the bicycle for the passenger. And there was a drug and firearm violation outside the East 12th, the 12th Street Station in Oakland. That's just a little smattering of what they do every day. We don't pass police in every one of those cities that can run through BART stations and do that work. We need the BART police for safety. Safety, in my opinion, is our first and primary responsibility. And we are running against, we are running up against two completely opposing kinds of actions with the safety versus the cell phone issue, as Director Keller pointed out. I was one of the BART members that asked for this meeting today because I thought that the people were unprepared for what we did, cutting off the cell phone service. We hadn't ever talked about that or given them any warning. And someone mentioned that we should have a crisis communication plan. I asked for that in 2009. I understand that we will be getting one before us in September 2011. So at least we are going forward and doing that. It's taken a while. We've had some changes in personnel, but we are going to get a crisis communication plan because I think that's one of the key things people need to know is what are we all about? What are we going to do? And that's why we do need to develop a policy, I believe. I also wanted this meeting because I believe that we need transparency behind BART's actions, and today is a good example of that transparency. And when I saw animation from Taiwan and knew that it was international, I thought it really was an issue that we needed to address. I really am a very strong believer in free speech, I think that I've been very confused about it because free speech means a lot to me. But and one constituent who sent me an email warned that cutting off cell phone is the first step down a slippery slope. I myself have been concerned about some of the things our federal government has done in the name of anti-terrorism. So it's a very important issue to me. And I do support peaceful protests. Those for August 8th that were intended were not planned to be peaceful. There were plans to, there were plans to chain people so they would get arrested. There were a lot of disruptive plans. What if people were stuck in the trans bay tube while all this was going on? What if somebody fell onto the third rail? I really am grateful for Antoinette Bryant because she pointed out that some of these things are indeed possible. And our staff is working hard to make sure that those things don't happen. It's not some hypothetical. You've all read about the trains that were being sabotaged in Europe. And our Homeland Security is on high alert about train problems in the United States. We need to be prepared for those things. It's not just a fantasy world anymore. It's a post 9/11 world. I worked for 10 years at the University of California, the home of the free speech movement, and there are laws that dictate that we, as well as the university, must have a time, place, and manner set aside for protests, and we do. It's outside of Fairgate. We are not saying that people cannot talk to us and have free speech. They can. It's just not on the platform. I'd like to suggest that we look at putting up a sign. Maybe it'll be for 3 or 6 months, but it will say, this is a free speech area where people can have peaceful protests. because we want to have visual acknowledgement that we support people talking to us, even if they are saying things that we don't like to hear. We support that. We support it in a time, place, and manner as dictated by California law that people have the right to protest us. They do not have the right to protest on the platform. Someone wrote to me and said, you don't have a right to speak in any place and at any time. You can't have a protest on the Bay Bridge during rush hour. No, you can't. As a matter of fact, you can't use your cell phone on an airplane. There are reasons why there are some restrictions, because it has to be the view of safety of the people is paramount. We've had many legal opinions both for and against the cell phone issue. Our general counsel read something today that was the same thing that was in the ACLU letter, and they're both saying that one said we did the right thing and one said that we did the wrong thing based on the same language, which I'm going to read again. The language is from a case, and it says, speech only loses its protection under rare circumstances when it is directed to inciting or producing imminent lawless action and is likely to incite or produce such action. So things that are happening on the platform are lawless if they are disrupting the trains, if they're pushing open the doors, if they're climbing on the trains. That's lawless, and it is against the law to do that. Another citation is from the California Penal Code. The California Penal Code says it's a violation of 369 IB. Any person who enters or remains upon any rail transit-related property owned or operated by a county transportation commission or transportation authority without permission or whose entry, presence, or conduct upon the property interferes with, interrupts, or hinders the safe and efficient operation of the rail line or rail-related facility is guilty of a misdemeanor. So there are other laws that are in conflict with this cell phone protest issue. Somebody also in those many emails that I got sent me something about an emergency number worldwide, and I tried it yesterday. Of course, I have cell phone service, so it wasn't totally accurate to try it this way. But it says there's an emergency number worldwide for mobile, 112. If you find yourself out of the coverage area of your mobile network, and if there is an emergency, dial 112, and the mobile will search any existing network to establish the emergency number for you. And interestingly, this number 112 can dial even if the keypad is locked. I tried it yesterday, and it sent me to 911. So there are also other opportunities for people, if there's a true emergency, to use their cell phone, even if it's locked, even if we shut something down. There's a true emergency. So all of that leads me to the fact that no matter that we should indeed allow cell phone service on our platforms, continue to allow cell phone service on our platforms, but that we should take this this piece that I just read about that was in an ACLU letter, and that was quoted by our attorney, that if the circumstances are directed to inciting or producing imminent lawless action and likely to incite or produce such action, speech is not as protected. We need to develop that more robustly, I think, as a board, and figure out what that means to us at BART, and when we will use this as direction for our agency. I support continuing to have cell phone service. I support putting a free speech sign up on our areas where free speech is allowed and encouraged, and I do not support any more protests on the platform. And the idea that we would have to disband our police in order to stop these protests is unacceptable.
Thank you, President Franklin. Thanks, everyone who came out and who's written to us. It's been a great conversation to have, and
We are breaking new ground here at BART, I think, in unfortunate ways. But hopefully the district is going to learn from this and be able to move on. And I think, you know, somebody who was very much involved in, you know, trying to sort out the mess after Oscar Grant shooting, the district needs to admit when it's made mistakes. And I think one of the things that really damaged our credibility was that immediate reaction of, no, we did everything right, when those subsequent investigations revealed that we hadn't done everything right. And I think as a district, we need to be vulnerable, right? It's hard. It's, you know, you always want to look like you're competent and in authority and that you're, you know, done everything right. I think it's important, though, when the district oversights or makes mistakes, that we admit it. Or even when we don't know, you know, to say, hey, we may have overreacted, to admit it. You know, and the point is not to punish. I don't want to punish anyone. Friedrich Nietzsche, who had issues of his own, said that mistrust all in whom the desire to punish is powerful. And I've taken that to heart. I think we should all mistrust people in whom the desire to punish is powerful. So the point here is not to punish anyone, although it's certainly some people's point, but not mine. I want to start doing the right thing going forward. There were sort of two issues that got conflated, that got wrapped up together in the presentation today and in some of the comments. And I think it's, although they're certainly related, but I think it's important we unpack them or separate them. Well, one is the demonstration tactics and what is a legitimate demonstration or exercise of free speech. And I'd say with this one, I'm with staff in the sense of, yeah, it is dangerous to demonstrate, to block trains, to climb on trains, to do stuff on the BART platforms. You know, I've been involved for years in trying to reinvest in BART capacity and have been briefed on just, you know, the incredible danger that we have on an average rush hour of these crowded platforms, the need to be able to evacuate them, the need for people to be able to move around safely, the kind of the sensitivity in terms of trains coming in, going out, vertical circulation, and so on. It's not a safe place to protest. It's not a responsible place to protest. And I agree with BART staff that we should not allow demonstrations, the blocking the doors, the blocking the trains, etc., on the BART platforms and in the paid areas of our stations. There was a comment made about de-escalation. We actually have had training in that. We think we could do more. We could always get better at that, but I just wanted to acknowledge Chief Rainey and his efforts to up our training. You know, whether Willie Brown said it or not, BART cops aren't real cops. They are real cops. BART cops get more training than is required for law enforcement officers in the state. And we've gone over and above that in the last few years. So could we get better at handling demonstrations? Yeah. And do we? Yes, we do. So that's that issue of the demonstrator tactics. And again, I don't have a lot of sympathy with the tactics, too. My office overlooks Market Street. And I was watching the, you know, people streaming up the street. I was watching the Muni trains who got blocked, right? So even if you have a desire to punish BART, then, what about Muni? What did Muni do? What did Muni riders do? You know, there's been a lot of collateral damage in these protests. And I think everybody involved needs to just ratchet down. Needs to just chill out a little bit. Be thoughtful. Consider, what are we trying to do here? What's the change we're trying to create? Now, with that, I'd say the other issue is the mobile phone service and cutting it off. I sort of looked at the ACLU letter, and I think there is the foundation or the basis of a good policy for the district here, which is, reading directly from it, we're writing to urge you to adopt a policy that ensures that BART does not shut down cell phone service on its trains or platforms except in the most extraordinary circumstances. And certainly not to interfere with demonstrations or other expressive activities. There are circumstances where this might be warranted, and two examples that were given in the ACLU letter are, yeah, you knew there was a bomb, and it was going to be, you know, it could be detonated with a cell phone service. That would be, you know, one instance. Another would be a hostage situation where, you know, you didn't want the hostage takers to communicate. That would be another instance. Those instances are rare. I don't know that we as a board, though, can say, okay, here's all the instances that we can envision, right? There needs to be some discretion about those extraordinary circumstances requiring prior board approval in a situation like that to kill people. However, you know, we need to trust as a board, the public needs to trust that that discretion is going to be exercised responsibly, that it's proportional. And proportionality is a really important principle of, you know, is the response proportional to the threat? And to give an example, actually, from the sort of post-9/11 world, when several years ago on this board, this was sort of shortly after September 11th attacks, Bart had received word that there was an imminent threat of a terrorist attack. Bart's response was to put TAC teams, so in essence SWAT teams, on Bart platforms and terrify people, because you suddenly had Bart police officers with automatic weapons, with all this armor, etc., on Bart platforms. I got a lot of phone calls about that. And people said, well, you know, what are they doing, and are they really going to use automated weapons in a crowded station? I mean, what's going on? So I talked to the chief, Chief G, and said, what's that about, you know? Is that right? You know, like, what were you trying to do there? And he had reasons why he had done that, you know? He wanted to show that we're ready, etc. But I think upon consideration, he said, you know what, that's not an appropriate response. It's not proportional to the threat. No, we aren't going to discharge automated weapons on a crowded platform, even if there are terrorists around. So why do that? And we changed our practice. There was never any question of policy, but Bart police practice changed. And this feels similar. I think the first protest with people climbing on top of the trains with blocked doors, etc., you know, freaked people out here for. And they might have overreacted in the second instance. But I think we need to correct that. I don't feel like it was proportional. The justification that was given earlier, which is, well, we were anticipating that there might be illegal activity. Well, there's illegal activity every day at Bart. It doesn't feel like strong enough or proportional enough the justification. I think we do need to have a policy. As to the question of civilian review board or not, I think, yeah, it's a great idea. When we created the civilian review board, Director Keller is absolutely right. We did say, we want the Civilian Review Board to do two things. One is we want to investigate specific instances of officer misconduct. The other thing we want them to do is to be able to proactively review the policies, procedures of Bart Police. So this is police practice policy. It's totally legitimate and totally falls into the area that we want the Civilian Review Board to be able to review. So if you want to take this up and make recommendations to us, I'd welcome those. I want to hear them. And then we can have more hearings on this issue and better understanding and a better discussion of our police tactics and practices in this regard. And I think Mr. Dobrik has said that these meetings have to be privileged. That's true to some extent. If you were discussing officer misconduct, personnel matters, yes, they do. But for matters of policy, those can be and are open meetings here at Bart. In fact, the Civilian Review Board has had a few publicly noticed meetings that have been open to members of the public and can have those here. So I do want to hear what our Civilian Review Board has to say, but ultimately I agree with Director Sweet in that this is a matter of policy for the board. And, you know, it's not always clear what a matter of policy is. You know, there's a sort of often practice, and then you realize, oh, wait, you crossed the line into policy. There's no definition in state statute of when there's a matter of policy. And I'm thinking about another cell phone issue, which, and again, this mobile phone issue has always been sort of presented to us as a real estate matter, but there's really some bigger implications here, and one issue that I took up a few years ago was, well, should we have free Wi-Fi or should we charge people? And me and my colleagues here didn't want to take that up as a policy issue. It was just treated as a commercial lease, but, phone access is more than just a commercial transaction. There's a lot of free speech rights here that are kind of packaged in, and I think we need to unpack those and then have some more policy discussions on that. So this has been a fantastic hearing. Unfortunately, this is not agendized as an action item. We cannot take action today. But as one director, I want to acknowledge Director Sweet for being the leader on this and kind of being the one, I think, who forced the issue and got this hearing done. Now that we've had this hearing, I do think we as a board need to make policy on this question. And I hope it'll be something like was outlined in this letter, that our default is not that we shut it off when we want to, but that it's only in these extraordinary circumstances. And you know, we probably need to have a discussion as a board and with our OWASH staff here on what the sorts of extraordinary, make sure everyone has the same idea of what an extraordinary circumstance is so that we prevent problems like this in the future.
Thank you. Director Berlant.
Thank you. I have several comments. First of all, I want to compliment the staff on putting together the 3-page letter that summarizes the actions and the thoughts that led up to...
He's not hot.
What's that?
Microphone.
Can you turn it on? I'm back away. Sorry. Anyway, the 3-page letter does a good job of summarizing the actions that led up to the cell phone suspension. I think that's a good piece of work. Secondly, I was appreciative of the ACLU letter, especially the second one that provided some comments that I think we're going to be able to look into for our further deliberations. And President Franklin, I want to compliment you for some really great leadership on this and bringing the matter to the board so we could have this discussion. And I think all of the public repartee that I heard you have was very thoughtful in its content. I appreciate it. I want to go back to the issue of cell phones and the establishment of that. I was one of the people on the board at the time that was very dubious about putting in cell phone service and not for any reason that led to this. I just was listening to all the people at Breitbart that say, you know, I'm so sick and tired of listening to those people who get on their cell phones when they pass through the at least down where I live, they get on a BART down in Fremont, and they're still on it when they went into the underground at Lake Merritt Station where the cell phone service was shut off, and that's the only rescue you got, an ongoing diatribe of things you didn't want to know about their nightlife the night before or other things. So I was very dubious about it, and of course we then got it, and of course I use it too. So I am very interested, I talked to the general manager about the issue with FCC, and we went over in touch with FCC and working on that. But also I was admonished about the contracts that BART has with the providers, because putting it in we wouldn't put any money into it, so the only way we could put it in was to enter into contracts with some providers so that they would afford all the costs. And it's in those contracts where I think we need to look to see what we can and cannot do. So I'm going to be anxious to get some of that feedback when we go to work on this policy. And Paul, I wanted to thank you for the data that you gave us about the capacities, particularly at Embarcadero, because I remember some 5 years or so ago when BART shut off the gates at Embarcadero about midnight or so, right after the fireworks went off. You remember that? And I thought, well, why? Well, the platform was full of people, and the trains were on a sparser schedule, even though we racked up spare trains. And so the escalators could deliver too many people to the platform, and it was dangerous that people might get shoved off, as Antoinette Bryant said, shoved off into the trackway. We don't need that. It has happened, could happen, and that was a good call. So I was appreciative of that information. Let's see. I was one of the directors who was at the briefing when we were briefed about what the BART police concerns were that's outlined in this letter. A 3-page letter, and I was there with everyone else, and I thought it was a good idea at the time. Listening to the dialogue here has given me some concern that we need to refine how we go forward with this, and I certainly don't want to have to have special board meetings to decide what to do, but we can't get to that point where the staff's hands are so tied that they can't act. That would be foolish. The people in my district, which is Southern Alameda County, with one exception, called me and said, great move by BART. Thank you for keeping us safe on BART. Keep up the good work. There was a letter from San Francisco that I suspect we all got that talks about the outrage that this person felt toward the protesters and describing their feelings about it. And Bart protected these our people from the anarchists, which was the right thing to do, and we did it without use of force or spending much money. Good move. You owe it to the ticket-purchasing public to keep them safe. This includes standing up to mobs and anarchists. Stick to this. Do not be intimidated. So there's people on the other side of the fence that are concerned that we might be intimidated and bend to some will. And by the way, at the end of the PS suggests doing the same thing that Director Murray indicated, and that is let's get more publicity on all the activities that our BART police do for the BART public, our patrons, as well as people in communities where they get caught with something at a BART station, and you're there to help take care of that. So I appreciate those efforts. I'm anxious to work forward on this policy statement, and as someone else observed a few minutes ago, it's not agendized for us to take any action today. And so, Mr. President, I'm sure you're going to be bringing this back so that we can get our arms around it when the staff has a chance to digest what we learned today and begin to formulate something that we can do.
And it's intentionally not agendized for action. Because
one more thing. I just wanted to say that listening to Antoinette describe in detail the kinds of things that her union members run into. I had occasion this last June, just a couple of months ago, to run into Richard Trunka. I think he's the president of AFL-CIO, the national president. We had a little race day there for a minute or two, and I told him, I said, for the last year, when I decided that I was really feeling a change, I have to tell you, Mr. Trunka, that the BART employees, as one group of unions, the station agents are more pleasant. They are more positive in their delivery of their work. The BART police are more visible. The train operators' messages are clearer and are upbeat rather than quiet and downbeat. He said, "Oh, I am so glad to hear you say that." I said, "Why?" I said, "I'm not getting that from anywhere. And we at the national level, leaning on all of our unions, are trying to convey that message to rebuild some connection between the agencies and the unions and the public. So I'm really pleased to hear you say that." So Antoinette, I want to let you know that I had those words with him and appreciate the fact that they're working with the locals to try to do things right. Thank you.
Just a follow-up comment, and it's a point that I should have made earlier when I was speaking, but it kind of speaks to the whole legal question of precedent setting and whether or not BART as a governmental agency wants to get into this idea of setting a precedent of doing something that we may not or we should not be doing. And I'd like to do as Director Murray did, read from a case that was from 1955, and it's Pike versus Southern Bell and Telegraph, where in this case, a gentleman by the name of Bull Connor ordered Southern Bell to remove the telephone of one Lewis Pike, described by Mr. Connor as a Negro of questionable character who is known to be using his phone for unspecified illegal purposes. In this case, what we're talking about is somebody who is taking their role as a governmental agency and saying, here's who I don't want to have access to any kind of communication. That's not where we as BART want to go. We do not want to just come right out and tell people or signify or specify you can't talk or you won't have the ability to talk because we don't want to hear what you have to say. We keep going around and around with these safety issues, and safety is very important, but do not be confused by saying
We have to have one or the other. There is a way to have both. This meeting today is a great way to look at how we can do that. And my hope is that walking away from today, my colleagues on this board are going to take into consideration a real need for a policy, one that will allow us to achieve both. So that was a point I need to make. And thank you for allowing me one more time.
Thank you, President Frank. I'll be very brief. I hope I didn't say anything that implied I wanted the citizens of New York to make the policy. I thought what I said was I wanted input for them before we made the policy. If I didn't say that clearly enough, then I apologize to everyone. But since we appointed them and they're taking their job with incredible seriousness, which I appreciate, we should ask them for their point of view before we make the final decision. But clearly the decision rests with this board, and if I said something other than that, then I was just simply mistaken. And I did mention that we're all citing cases now. We're all using the ACLU letter, so as you can tell, there's a lot of information, a lot of good information in the letter. But I said in my initial comments that had I had this letter, it would have caused me to ask more questions when we were briefed by the staff on this issue in a session. And the sentence that would have caused me to ask more questions is this one. It bears emphasis that speech does not lose its protection merely because it may lead indirectly to disruption. And it goes on to say, speech only loses its protection under the rare circumstances when it is directed to inciting or producing imminent lawless action and is likely to incite or produce such action. I think that really, for me, boils the issue down to what we need to focus on. There is going to be some time, I think, some legitimate time, where this policy that we adopt as a board will include the ability to, as was cited by several directors, using a cell phone to ignite or start a bomb in a station. We probably want to turn off. I think we probably all could agree, if that was an imminent danger, we'd probably want to turn off cell phone service to prevent that act from occurring. But it's got to be rare, it's got to be limited, and I would hope that the ACLU would continue to participate and monitor this and give us feedback as we move forward, because I think there was a lot of thoughtful action that went into that letter.
Thank you.
One more issue, an issue of policy that I think we ought to think about. A few people who did say to me, well, yeah, we can understand that BART, might want to do this, but does the public have a right to know what's happening? And, should we inform the public that its mobile phone service, maybe under those extraordinary circumstances, isn't working or isn't? And that's something that we need to talk about as well. So, because a lot of people, if people don't know what's going on, and we found this over and over again, what people want, if something extraordinary is happening, something unusual is happening, they want information. They want to know what's going on, why, how long it's going to last, etc. And I think that's something we need to think about. We need to think about the ways that we get information to people about what's happening. I mean, I've been working with Paul on the, electronic signboards, and there's some limitations there. It's kind of an older technology, and it may not be able to get the information to the customers that we want to get to them in the ways that we want to get to them. And I think, all of these protests, all the disruption that we've had over the last few weeks has made me think we need to do a little bit more work on customer information. First of all, what do we tell people about what's happening? And do we really have the means to tell people effectively what's happening? And the comment about disabled folks as well had me thinking about that. Can we get the word out if something's different?
So when I was coming here today, I didn't know what to expect from the crowd. And if I look back at 2009 after the tragic shooting of Oscar Grant, the reaction, it was another controversial thing that BART had to deal with. And the reaction was a lot different then. And there was just this immediate distrust of BART. And I think if you look 2.5 years later, and I'm just going to call on Mr. McCarroll, it's just his approach, just that he's willing to give people give this organization the benefit of the doubt, I think is emblematic of We're here. And also just even the ACLU's position that not focusing on what happened, but the policy moving forward, I think is very helpful. It's a great dialogue that I see. A speaker did ask my opinion, or all of our opinions, and where we sit on this act, so I will go forward with that. And if you look at the evolving tactics of Bard Police over a series of protests, beginning with July 11th, when there were that was the first protest, Bard Police were not on a platform there. It was a very odd dynamic because you have a group protesting Bard Police, and here are the Bard Police that have to help facilitate and protect our passengers. It's an odd dynamic. And on July 11th, Bard Police were not even on the platform. They showed a tremendous amount of restraint by, those are Bard employees, which was a little unfair of us to put them in between an angry group. And they were getting pushed and shoved, and they were fighting for our passengers. So, and then that was July 11th. And on July, the next protest, it was continuing, and until on August 11th, we received news the day before that this was going to be a ramped-up protest. And as I, my opinion on this, I can't help but think of Chief Rainey. It is on him to ensure the safety of our passengers that night. And although it's hypothetical that someone would get hurt, from a protester's point of view, this may not have happened. No one, maybe someone didn't get hurt. But from the BART organization, it's my opinion and why I supported Chief Rainey's tactic that we couldn't take that chance. We couldn't allow, I mean, when it happened, there's 8,000 people in the Transbay tube, and there is a tactic to potentially chain themselves to stop the traffic of people in the tube. We can't do that. And I thought even that tactic was a passive way to avoid confrontation with the protesters. It wasn't about silencing their voice. We welcome it. We've identified areas. We've scheduled this meeting to hear from people in the appropriate forum. So just to answer that question, I do respect the chief's the position then. And even on the protest on August 15th, it was my understanding no arrests were made. It was a hands-off, please, we can't have this protest here. And they kept going, so finally on August 22nd, arrests were made, and hopefully that shifts the tide. We can't have, for me, it's a safety issue, for the reasons that Paul outlined in the beginning. So I see the cell phone service as part of this overall plan of how our police agency has dealt with these protests. And a lot of the demands of the protesters now are about, it's shifted from anonymous demands, have shifted about their initial demands were never shut off cell phone service, and the country is a free speech zone, so we are allowed to have free speech on the platform. And now they've shifted to 5 demands about our police department, principally. So we still have an issue, I think. Under Chief Rainey, under our Citizen Review Board, we have made a lot of positive changes, and I think I stand by our partners. I think they're doing a great job, and there are some actions that unfortunately happened in the past, and I hope we take this opportunity to move forward. In regards to this cell phone policy, I think that just if I could be so presumptuous, just begin to sum up what we like, maybe present, and then I can have people chime in if I want to get something wrong. But just to just to basically follow this ACLU document that Mr. Richard kindly forwarded to us, just to have an extreme case when our passengers are imminently at risk. And then also to add a qualifier that Director Lagunich suggested, that the response is proportional. So if we're silencing everyone for a very limited thing, that's not appropriate. But if it's maybe for 10 minutes, or I think there's varying degrees of when it's appropriate, and to have some flexibility, I think it is important. But also to take into account those that would be inconveniently and unintendedly inconvenienced. So the person that has hearing disabilities, the people that have to even make a casual phone call, and we have set up alternatives, which we did on August 11th. We had radios and wide courtesy cell phones and intercoms, but we can even take it a further step. I think that there's there's policy, but there's also the wraparound services of this policy to let people know that if this unfortunate incident happens and we have to do this, you're to notify people, you're entering in a zone for the next 20 minutes or so, or whatever the policy is, just to help manage the expectations. And I also think that there should be a report out of when this is done and the reasons that it's done, so we can test that we've done something appropriately. And then to take for BART staff to take this policy, put it in words and make it sound a little more articulate and make it collectively articulate, and then to vet it through our citizen review board, to vet it through the ACLU, and also to have another public forum, did we get this right? So that is my sum of that. There's other comments?
Whatever policy we ultimately come up with, that we not only vet it through us, but we have made sure that the appropriate governmental agencies have been contacted, namely the CPUC for California and the FCC for the United States.
That's a great idea. That's a great idea. Anything else? Any other comments or reactions? Are we getting done before 12? Thank you very much.
Yeah,
we'll meet. Oh, excuse me. We're going to now enter the closed session of item 4A, a special meeting agenda. And we will meet again in open session after this is not closed.